Hey, thank you so much for joining. I'm Joe Peterson. I'm the Vice President of Cloud and Security for Clarify 360 and also the Chief Analyst at ClearTech Research. And I'm here today moderating Security Angle for you. Shelly is on a well-deserved vacation with her family. And I've got an amazing guest to chat with today. I've got Mr. Chuck Brooks of Brooks Consulting. Hi, Chuck.
How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for joining today.
Great to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. So in case y'all don't know, Chuck is the president, obviously, of Brooks Consulting, and he has over 25 years experience in cybersecurity, emerging technologies, marketing, business development, government relations. On the daily, Chuck helps Fortune 1000 clients, organizations, small businesses, and startups achieve their strategic goals and grow their market share. In case you don't know, Chuck is also an adjunct professor at Georgetown University, and he teaches courses on risk management, homeland security, cybersecurity, and he also designed a certificate course on blockchain technologies. Chuck, did I get it all? What else do you do to keep busy during the day?
Well, I do a lot of things. I travel a lot to conferences. I actually just came back from UK, Farnborough, speaking at the SpaceCon show on cybersecurity for space. And I've got another one coming up in May in Rome, which I'm co-chairing on global cybersecurity. And one, I think, in April called GSEC in Dubai. So I'm making the rounds there. And I also visiting Editor of Homeland Security today. And I write for Forbes. And I'm here with my dog now, preparing to head for this interview.
Great. Well, hello to the dog. What's the dog's name?
Yeti. We rescued him from China. He was unfortunately going to be eaten. He was stolen from someone, I think. And he's been here for now. It's his third year birthday with us yesterday. And he's a great dog. He's an American Eskimo.
Happy birthday, Yeti.
His ears perked.
How cute. So we are going to chat about cybersecurity regulations, and what's kind of going on in that space right now. So a little bit of a precursor. If we look back at 2023, we saw that Congress didn't pass a comprehensive privacy bill, but the White House pushed to implement a national strategy on cybersecurity. And at the state level, we saw moves to tighten data protection with lots of conversation around AI and its implications. So if we take a look through a legal security lens into 2024, we'll see legislative developments in a few areas. We're going to see the regulation of privacy and data security. That's going to be big. More civil litigation around data privacy, and then trends that pertain to government data collection. And let's go right out of the gate and talk about the EO on AI that came out in the U.S. here in October 23. The AI Act was also introduced in the EU in 2023, and there are huge differences between the two. The legal team at DL Piper draws them out really nicely. So the EO draws on the powers of the presidency to require primary executive departments to formulate consensus industries and legislation for AI usage, which creates a risk of divergent standards. And then in contrast, the AI Act aims to establish a regulatory framework across the entire EU as a single regulation, which will be directly applicable in member states. So the EO predominantly focuses on standards and guidelines, whilst the AI Act enforces binding regulation, violations of which will incur fines and other penalties for further legislative action. So the question that I have for you, Chuck, is, does the EO do enough?
Well, it depends from your perspective. I think first you have to clarify that, you know, there's a lot of cultural and historical reasons why they're different. I mean, Europe already is basing this off of GDPR, which they enacted a few years ago for privacy. So they followed some of the same formulas, and they enacted it as one entity. Now, when you're dealing with the United States, we have a completely divergent a political system based with lots of lobbyists and interests in industry that have different viewpoints on what constitutes privacy and what constitutes data. So you're having no real collective agreement on what to enforce and what to find. So the standards that are put forth from the U.S. Act, I think, sort of make sense for two reasons. One is that, you know, most people just don't understand what artificial intelligence is. We're too early and too uneducated to really formulate strong policies and enact them. And this is really, I think, almost a flyer to see what's going to happen. And creating standards is a really important area. There's been a lack of that in cybersecurity, as you know, a lack of that in the Internet of Things. And when you're dealing with manufacturers all over the world and you're dealing with a global digital ecosystem, it's very difficult to get on the same page with anything. So having some standards at least makes it a goal worthy. The second thing is that the Act does draw attention to what artificial intelligence is and what may do. And I think this kind of awareness is a really good thing for debate. There's all kinds of thoughts on what AI is. And of course, you know, there's a doom and gloom crowd that says it's going to destroy us and take us over relatively soon. a couple of people have predicted super into AI by the end of the decade. So I think it's pretty interesting. But, you know, when you're looking at trying to do any kind of enactment, you know, whether it be zero trust or security by design, really, the toughest part is always getting the buy-in from the private sector. And for governments to do this, it's a little different, of course, as I said earlier, with Europe, where they have to follow, and they also put stringent fines. We don't have that capability here yet. And so I think we're going to see what has to happen to unfold and what the feedback is. You know, if you look at things right now, you're talking about CMMC and defense for, you know, cybersecurity several years ago, but we still don't have an enactment yet. So our process is much slower and much more difficult to enact as a unified entity. So I think, you know, so is it good as bad? It's good that we're talking about it. It's probably remains to be seen whether it's really good or bad in its directives.
I'm glad you brought up CMMC, because as you were chatting about this being a good first step, at least that's what I was hearing, you know, the government sort of pushed the envelope with CMMC as it relates to ZTNA and said, look, if you want to do business with us, you got to have CMMC says you've got to have ZTNA in place. Are we going to see the government put a foot forward, in your opinion, to say, okay, well, if you're going to work with us on an AI project in any way, you've got to kind of have this framework in place? You think we'll see that same sort of thing?
Yeah, I think we'll see it. But again, even with CMMC, it's not enacted yet. And there's a lot of issues because a lot of the small businesses can't afford to have that expertise or pay for it. You know, so I think there's a lot of divergence on what constitutes the requirement. So I think with artificial intelligence, we're just beginning to understand the implications itself. You know, with generative AI is quite unique in a lot of ways. And there's a lot of competing interests that use different LLMs and other things. So getting a grip on it is going to be difficult for the government. But I think the direction is exactly what you're saying. Eventually, when this really, whenever it sort of starts to go out of control, which it may do, there's going to be a political call for action. And I think there'll be a next couple steps probably to try and regulate it more effectively. And that may include, you know, some stipulations similar to SEC, where if you don't do this in a certain amount of days, if you don't disclose it, or if you don't report to this entity that you have issued there, that you may have subject yourself to some sort of fine or penalty. So compliance is going to be a much tougher issue with AI, you know, than anything else, because it's not necessarily generated in the United States either. It can be from anywhere around the globe. So just like cybersecurity. So it's difficult to get a foot on. And so we're still going to go as we go. And, you know, I think if you're looking at Congress is the answer to things, you know, over the last few years, they've demonstrated their ignorance of technology and of what is happening generally. And years ago, they voted to ban the Office of Technology Assessment because they thought they didn't need it. So I don't think we have the expertise legislatively. So again, I go back to our system. It's competing interests. You know, the big companies, small companies, medium companies, various industries all have different perspectives. And to collectively get one together is too difficult. That's why it's interesting to watch what with zero trust is happening, because that was sort of enacted very strongly to get control of data and identity management. And it's really taken a foothold in all the various federal agencies by mandate, but now in the private sector. So I think that's maybe a good model to follow, but it'll take some time.
Yeah, that's fair. And, you know, it's interesting, as I see AI bubble up into the mainstream media, the thing that they talk about, or that I hear them talk about at least, is consumers are worried about their data, right? From that aspect. Not so much as some of the other things, but the consumer data portion of things. Are you hearing the same?
I'm hearing the same. You know, it's a sort of a dichotomy between Europe and here. They're very much concerned about privacy and data over there. Here, you have a strong privacy group element, you know, that wants to protect data at all costs, and even identity, even in cases of homeland security interests. But I think most consumers are ignorant of this. They voluntarily post too much or give whatever they want to give up without knowing it. I mean, the disclosure is, of course, on the data. But I think with social media algorithms now, the cat's already out of the bag. You know, they know everything about us and what we do, where we shop, what we buy, and what our interests are. And you know, I don't see any regulation coming soon on that.
No, but it's interesting. As I was preparing to chat with you, I was doing some reading about the statewide or the states that have adopted comprehensive data privacy legislation. And since 2018, 14 of them have done that. Five are currently effective, and the remaining 9 are going to go into effect between 24 and 26. In your opinion, do we need national regulation on data privacy?
I think we do. You know, Vint Cerf, of course, the chief evangelist for Google, said there's no such thing as privacy anymore. But I think it's still the main platform for fraud, and particularly victimizes the elderly and less informed people that use the internet. So it's going to grow, and they're now saying that the younger generations don't even care; they'll give anything. So if unless it's federal, I don't think it's going to really be enforced. I think, you know, states are going to have a lot of challenges because, again, this is a internet. This is, you know, where's the jurisdiction at, and who's going to enforce it? Who's going to give the, you know, how much law enforcement activity are going to really direct towards that with all the other issues going on? So I think it's good that states are considering it, and they're all varying too, you know, law. So I think what really is needed is a federal level, a law that is consistent, but maybe not necessarily strident in requiring every privacy, because there's circumstances that may negate a need for that. And again, looking for law enforcement and other issues, but I think it's a necessary goal, at least to go for, because, you know, we're in a world now that is almost entirely digital. And it's just starting to get, it's bad already, but it's going to get much worse.
Yeah. And, you know, I was reading about this concept of data minimization, and that some states are looking to impose obligations on the data controllers, like the organizations that maintain the data. Can you explain to us, in case folks aren't familiar, what is data minimization and what should every CISO be thinking about as it relates to data minimization?
Yeah, it's really a policy, in a sense, to really what data is available to share. You know, if you look at what you're looking at in terms of when you deal transactions you're dealing with a lot of vendors and stuff like that, they often have disclaimers, or they will say that your data will not be shared outside of this, you know, whatever. So it sets basically posts where you can't do anything with the data that's not stipulated up front. So I think, you know, the minimizing of where it can be shared is really what it's about. But again, the enforcement part of that is very difficult. You know, I mean, how do you track, you know, where everything's gone? You know, I mean, there's a lot of services and stuff like that. But again, most people are unaware of it. And I'm sure all of us have experienced the fact that once we've bought something with a vendor, all of a sudden we'll get 50 different advertisements from someone else. Our data sold, and you know, selling the data is a big issue too. And data aggregators are a big business. And as long as it's a profit for these companies and they're making huge profits on it, they're going to do all they can to try and dismiss any efforts to really, you know, lock down that data, because that's a valuable commodity for them. It's like oil, and data is valuable. And, you know, for vendors and retailers, particularly, knowing the buyer habits and behaviors is like gold for them too. I mean, they need that to basically streamline their industries in that end. So I think, again, all this is really interesting. And I think it's, you know, all, you know, it's just like law itself. I mean, there's always gray areas. And, you know, you have to really get a hand on the global digital ecosystems before you can even try to enact a lot of this legislation. And then there's so many different components to prosecuting it, enforcing it, and also, you know, disclosing it. And, you know, you're seeing, you know, it's much easier in Europe, I think, to do that than it is here, because we just don't have the mindset for it.
Yeah, you're right. It is partly mindset, but, you know, I've been thinking this whole time that data is bacon, but no, you upheld and told me that data is oil. I want to talk a minute about healthcare data. You know, there are states that are really being forward about what they're going to allow and what they won't allow. And in April 23, Washington State's Governor Jay Inslee signed the My Health, My Data Act into law. And it modified the legal landscape with respect to health-related data for certain Washington industry, you know, entities. The MHMDA creates this privacy regime focused on personal health data. Do you think we're going to see more states follow suit here? And if yes, what does that mean for healthcare CISOs that need to sort of adhere to these new laws?
Well, they still have, you know, the HIPAA laws already in place. And, you know, so, you know, and how, you know, the data itself is valuable and it's a privacy issue. There's two things there. It's less valuable than it was. Mm. I think the bigger problem right now with the healthcare industry is the ransomware, because they're being forced to pay and you know, patients and use. But getting back to your question, I think there'll be some moves to that. You know, Washington's not a really example of a typical state. You know, they're smaller. They tend to be more consumer oriented than other states. So I'm not sure. There's not much, if it's going to be sort of replicated in other states. But I think it's a good idea. I mean, everyone, we are, and we're also, if you really want to get futuristic, we're going to look at, you know, our DNA and everything now is being shared. So it's just not just our health data, it's our very selves that is at risk. And I think we have to implement those kind of privacy legislation for the future, because, it is going to be, a big brother kind of situation if we don't. And also, I still think the cybersecurity risks is still a big problem. You know, that doesn't necessarily pertain to the data privacy. It pertains to the data security. But, I think there's a long way to go. Again, the HIPAA stuff has been around for a long time, and there's compliance issues, enforcement issues. But you hear every day of data being leaked, private data, and the consequences have not been that severe.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, my last question, it's got a little bit of spice to it, because it's an opinion question. So, or at least part of it is, the SEC adopted new cybersecurity disclosure rules for public companies and kind of changed the game a little bit, right? As it related to risk management, strategy, government, sort of impactful for some organizations. Can you break that down for us? And then can you tell us how CISOs are feeling about it that you talked to?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag from what I'm hearing. But yeah, it breaks down as they have 4 days to disclose a breach, a material breach. And, that in itself is not a bad thing, because there's been obviously legislation and court activity around that has put the CISO at risk, you know, from several cases actually recently. Mm-hmm. And so I think from CISO's perspective, most don't like the idea because it puts more liability on their shoulders, and mm-hmm. it puts more responsibility. And there's some that say that, you know, they shouldn't be responsible. So it's the C-suite's role to protect the, you know, the corporate activities, not the CISO shouldn't go to jail or be fined because of that. So that's a separate issue. But, you know, the SEC value, I think, is that too many companies have been very lenient on cybersecurity awareness. And part of this legislation calls for cybersecurity awareness. They have to get the fundamentals down. The breach is just one part of it, but they have to have an expertise. What they got rid of was that requirement on the C-suite and the board that you have a cybersecurity expert. And that was originally in the legislation for push down, which I think was a bad thing. Because I still think for most C-suites, they just don't have a clue. And nor should they necessarily have it, because cybersecurity landscape is pretty complicated with all the different technologies and all the different levels of security required and all the compliance. And, you know, it can't all be on the CISO's shoulders. And you need people on the board who understand the implications and liabilities. And that needs to be, I think, that missing ingredient needs to be reenacted. So I think, you know, the SEC's, again, just like everything else, it's the first step. And we'll see what happens in disclosures. I know several companies that were reluctant to disclose, particularly public ones, because it affects their stock price, you know, and, you know, everything is always the bottom line with these corporations, and its security has always been second thought, you know, as a cost item. But now I think what it does is it puts security up front. And anytime you have security up front is a good thing. So I think what we need to do is go back to this and look at how do we make this more functional? And how do we really make it more fair? And it should be really looked at also to protect consumers and protect the small and medium businesses too that don't have an understanding of what cybersecurity is or the resources or the expertise to really adhere to this. But public companies have no excuse anymore, right? They need to know.
Yeah, they need to know. I you know, what I'm hearing on the fairness aspect is, and maybe even a rethinking on the part of some of the CISOs that I talk to. Some of them feel as if, hey, look, if I'm reporting to the CIO and I ask for budget for this stuff and I don't get budget, how can I be held responsible? Exactly. Right? And it's a fair question. And the second thing that I'm hearing them talk about is, okay, let's give myself a different title here.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, and then I forget whose feed it was today, but now there's insurance coming out, personal insurance coming out for CISOs for life. Had you seen anything around that?
I've heard about it. Now, you know, that's a good thing in my opinion, but you know, they need it. You know, I think just like anyone else in the C-suite, they need insurance, but you put a really good point there because most CISOs don't have budget authority. Half of them don't even have procurement authority. So if they want something, not necessarily get it. And they're forced to sit there and deal with a lot of compliance and audit issues half the time. So having a CISO responsibility for a breach that something may have been in the system that after they came on, you know, which often is the case, there's always lateral movement in these things. And you're going against state actors too as a company. Most of these are instituted by state actors or supported by state actors, these groups. Particular ransomware group. So how do you hold an individual that doesn't have the resources or capabilities responsible for fines? That part is wrong. You know, I think it's wrong. Disclosing a breach is a different thing. You know, obviously that's a good thing. Awareness is another thing, but holding liability to a CISO, I think is the wrong way to go.
Yeah, I do too. So, well, thank you for taking some time with me today. Thank you for sort of, you know, sharing your thoughts on some of these upcoming and or existing legislations that we're seeing happen. It feels like we're at the start of some of the stuff for AI but we're just sort of peeling back the onion a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few months. And we'd love to have you back and have you visit with us again.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot now with the chief digital officer is now chief digital and artificial intelligence officer.
Right.
Agencies. So it's interesting. They're starting, But
they're starting.
We're at the very beginning of the finish. You know, the finish line is a long way off.
Oh, for sure. We're just all learning about it. So thank you again for taking time. Thanks, everybody,
pleasure.
For joining. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Bye.